Into the Labyrinth, written and read by Fresney, Fandom Sherlock BBC, part of the Variations on Equation series. Warnings, Omegaverse. Also, Sherlock has sex with a plant while underage. John the plant is presumably of age. Also, it's a dystopia as run by evil Moriarty clones. People die. It's one unnamed extra's due. After the Gene Wars of the 21st century, First Citizen Moriarty VIII ruled quite benignly. That's what all the smiling people on all the smiling posters looking adoringly at her were clearly thinking. They were wearing yellow sweaters. Yellow was the color of adoration. Yellow was well understood to be a happy color in the happy, clean, bright streets of Napoleon. The First Citizen Moriarty, having a fondness for that particular historical fellow. There was no crime there, not even a speck of garbage on the streets. There were a great many green lizards, with worrying electric eyes, that watched from the clean buildings and well-washed rooftops. As well, everyone was encouraged to report any miscreants. One in four reported on each other, which was a shockingly low statistic. "Loose lips keeps the ship afloat," read the poster with the First Citizen Moriarty VIII, tapping her lips with a coy smile in her bright red dress with a red velvet flower on the shoulder. Red was the color of love. "There were no problems. Take your daily soma," read one poster with First Citizen Moriarty VIII, winking at the camera. "Divided we conquer," read another with the First Citizen clasping her hands and looking serious, with presumably an Alpha and an Omega separated by walls behind her. "Produce and reproduce for a continuing future," read another poster featuring First Citizen Moriarty smiling over a crash of newly minted babies in a row of cribs. The Alphas and the Omegas, each divided into their districts, walked briskly about their business. Well, the Omegas waddled in various stages of slowly as they went about the business of reproduction. The children, contained in their district, surrounded with artificial beta scent, and the sound of First Citizen Moriarty as they grew up to be the next generation of Alphas and Omegas. First Citizen Moriarty was, as her name implied, the eighth in a series of clones of the First Citizen, who had been the only genetically engineered super soldier left standing at the end of the Gene Wars. Perhaps it would have worked better if each generation of Moriarty hadn't decided that the next should be cloned from her genetic material. "Eight is great," wasn't really the best in the series of posters. That one featured the First Citizen laughing from a swing that seemed to float in the air as much as her blue dress floated around her extended legs. Blue was the color of tranquility when one of her broadcasts flickered to life on one of the mandated one monitor per room. Everyone in the room would smile brightly at each other and say something like, "Goody!" or "Yay!" They said the same thing while watching the footage of a nonconformist running the labyrinth, possibly while looking nervously at each other, or more watching lizards, because there was the occasional nonconformist. No criminals, just nonconformists. There was a fairly low bar on nonconformity. It was why there was such strict population replenishment requirements. The fifth time Jeff caught Sherlock defacing a poster, he said, "You again?" He looked at the lizard currently watching the alley. "This is a citizen's arrest." Sherlock said, "I disabled it. Easy enough to do if you study them, Greg." Jeff sighed and made a further note in his notebook. "I told you I have to report you." Sherlock shrugged and went into holding. His caseworker, Mycroft, sat across from him, over a clean, varnished table, and plucked the sharp stick Sherlock was using to fill the table face with lizards merging into pigeons from his hand. Mycroft was an Omega like Sherlock would eventually be, belly round with his government-mandated pregnancy, based on optimal genetic match with an Alpha from the Alpha District. Mycroft was already well on his way to proving his worth to Napoleon City. He had 6 stars on his clean-pressed shirt collar. That meant he was only 2 away from being eligible for cloning, and no more binary reproduction for him. He was, in a word, a model citizen. Sherlock considered him a lazy cat. He knew that Mycroft had arranged to be his caseworker, that Mycroft was volunteering his time in the teen creche, just as the teens were expected to volunteer in the 0-to-12-year creche, that Mycroft wasn't just a minor official in the city government, that officially there was no such thing as siblings or parents, but that Mycroft had the same fold to his eyelids as Sherlock. They had the same hands. That Mycroft saw what he did. "We must stop meeting like this," smiled Mycroft. "You're 15 years, 6 months, and 4 days old, Sherlock. This type of behavior won't be tolerated forever." "Until I'm 16, said Sherlock, tracing his fingers over the outlines of what he'd drawn. "Then they'll throw me into the labyrinth." Sherlock laughed, as if that wasn't a death sentence. As if there weren't things that crawled and consumed in there. Then again, he'd been studying the footage. Also, the labyrinth was technically a maze, because the term labyrinth referred to something with one door in, and one path to one center. Although, word crime was a fairly minor thing on the tally of the first citizen's crimes against humanity, in Sherlock's opinion. As it happened, Sherlock was incorrect. Not about the crimes. He just didn't have that long. "I'm going to request that your soma dose be increased," said Mycroft. "Clearly, the current dosage isn't quite right. It's not your fault that you're a growing boy." Mycroft smiled at him from across the table. Sherlock rolled his eyes. They both knew that neither of them were taking their soma. They just didn't, for different reasons. He tapped his foot on the floor in the code that they had developed. Mycroft passed Sherlock some additional information about the south area of the labyrinth. Sherlock passed back information about Mycroft's 3-year-old daughter in the next creche down. Sherlock had been arrested for the same reason he always was. He wanted information. Mycroft wanted information. The monitor flickered to life, and for all of 3 seconds, they both thought it was another announcement, but that wasn't First Citizen Moriarty VIII. Mainly because she was sitting in her chair with her neck at a very bad angle. She was also missing her eyes. "Hey, sexy city." An eye peered into the camera, and then pulled away to reveal a very familiar face. "Moriarty IX here. I got tired of waiting for 8 to roll over and die already. And oopsie! I may have killed all the others." Moriarty 9 folded her hands together. "I think cloning is overrated." Moriarty 9 clicked her tongue. "It's so boring. I'm going to go in a different direction." She picked up a red cloth and gold crown. "Also, enough of this First Citizen nonsense. I'm declaring myself emperor. If it was good enough for Nappy B, it's good enough for me." She preened for the camera. 8 only wore this in bed, but I think crowns make great day wear." The door of the room Mycroft and Sherlock were in slid open, and a medtech, his scent ripe with pregnancy, stepped into the room. Most Omegas were pregnant when they came to tend the creches. Most Omegas were always pregnant, unless they were very model citizens, or had medical dispensation, though most of them ended up running the labyrinth. The medtech ripped open the sleeve of Sherlock's shirt and jabbed him with something. Sherlock felt it immediately. This was not soma. This was the opposite of Soma. The room's temperature shot up by 30 degrees. The lights were too bright. The scent of the fessened omegas was disgusting. The medtech left the room without a word, to be replaced with a cloned guard in familiar black with a familiar face. The Submarans had been the same for over 3 centuries. Mycroft was looking at the monitor. He was thinking. They were both thinking. Sherlock said, "Mycroft, I stay calm." Mycroft didn't look away from the monitor. His foot under the table tapped the familiar code. It amounted to the same thing. Moriarty 9 shoved Moriarty 8's body off the well-padded chair from which she'd given so many announcements, and sat her crossed legs down. "Now, if I'm going to breed with someone, I need to know they really want it." She pumped her fist in the air. "That they only want me for the rest of their lives." She spun in her chair. "I'm going to turn some freshly presented alphas and omegas loose into the labyrinth for a little game of don't fuck or you die. All those omegas dripping for it. All those alphas hungry to knot and pin some dripping omega. But you know, the labyrinth is full of nasties. So if you stop to fuck, well, that's where you die. First one to make it to the center gets..." She spread her arms wide. "Well, I get you." She winked at the camera. "She's insane." Sherlock looked at Mycroft. "She's a beta." "I remind you, dear boy, to cast your mind back to Moriarty 5, whose glorious time as our first citizen was capped by when she had her genetics modified to that of a lizard's." "Ah, the eggs," said Mycroft, smiling, as if what he was saying was model citizen material. "If only it hadn't resulted in gigantism. But we cannot have everything." He tapped his foot on the floor. He said, "I shall be watching this government-provided entertainment." He tapped, "I'll disable what I can to help you get to the center." "I have no intention of breeding with our glorious new emperor." Sherlock glared at Mycroft. Mycroft tapped his foot in the pattern of "the other thing would be better." Mycroft stood up. "Good luck in the labyrinth." He walked out. He walked out, and the Seb stood in the doorway impassively. Their dose of Soma was practically intravenous. A fashion tech came in and fitted Sherlock for the labyrinth. White skin suit, the better to show up against the walls. He was already dripping by the time they pushed him into an entry point, and 1, 2, 3, the door to the labyrinth opened. There were green hedges. They were in the east section. The other 10 omegas set off at a run. Sherlock waited. He waited for the first scream, and pushed his way through the hedge, just as something large and furry charged into the entry point. Sherlock had been studying the labyrinth all his life. He'd mapped practically every section, every pitfall, each turn. In particular, he noted the green mountain that loomed over the north section. He'd studied it. There were orchards there, the white line of a waterfall. What everyone seemed too moronic to notice was that the labyrinth was outside Napoleon City's demilitarized zone. Moriarty 9's voice boomed over a loudspeaker. "Ooh, cheating. I like your moxie, Foxy Maggie." Of course, he'd never planned on having to go to the center of the labyrinth. He'd focused on circumnavigating the outside, but he could be adaptable. He went left, right. He bent over as a cramp went through him. It felt like an empty fist reached in and twisted. Then emptiness when it withdrew. He wanted to lie down. He wanted to spread his legs. He was full of need. Another scream, more of a gurgle this time. He kept walking. He passed the dismembered body of an alpha. A minotaur had gotten him. Sherlock knelt down and examined the remains. It was the closest he'd ever been to see the effects of a minotaur, or for that matter an Alpha. The Minotaur appeared to have been a Texas Longhorn derivative, rather than Black Angus. It gave him something to think about, other than the ache inside of him, the sweat beating on his face, the faint scent of the dead Alpha, even now having an effect on him. He lost himself in not losing himself. He heard something shifting in the trees. He cursed. He'd stayed too long. It wasn't a Minotaur. Worse. Moriarty III had been something of a horticulturalist. Running was not an option. Sherlock had studied what happened to people who ran from a Scylla. They were surprisingly fast for a plant, and the thorns running along its midsection stalks were projectiles, and dripping with a fast-acting anesthetic and slow-acting neurotoxin. He squashed the image of shoving the largest spine into his rectal area, as not helpful. He stood very still. The Scylla slid forward on its ambulatory stalks. Sherlock counted them. 12 ambulatory stalks, 8 midsection stalks, and 5 sensory stalks. This was a mature adult. One of its ambulatory stalks was badly scarred with fire damage and twisted. Sherlock should stand very still and not move. He was not very good at standing still and not moving. He ran a finger along the damaged stalk. I know when you got this. When that Alpha managed to start a fire. You've been damaged for years. The thing swayed as he talked. A stalk curled around the hand that was touching the damaged area. The damaged ambulatory stalk was so burned that it dragged on the ground. He reached down, groaning at the feeling of the skin suit dragging against his heated skin, and snapped off the dry, dead limb. The Scylla shuddered. A sensory stalk slid along his face. He shivered at the touch. A touch. Any touch. He could smell the corpse of the Alpha. The scent of Alpha and death. He needed to be filled. He needed to breed. He needed to focus on the cool slide of the sensory stalk, following a bead of sweat down his cheek. Another stalk was brushing against his leg, to slide up the path of the liquid dripping from him. He groaned. The thing swayed, and there was a sweet scent in the air, from the small blue flowers that opened and closed, in a rapid pattern near the midsection stalks with their thorns. He groaned again as it continued to explore. The thing swayed. Sherlock ran through his mind labyrinth, past every run he'd seen. None of the runners had been in heat. This was new. Moriarty IX's voice chirped out of the throats of a dozen lizards clinging to the hedges. Now, now. Enough hanging around being felt up by the plants, sweetie. You might want to try running, or someone else will be the lucky winner. There were heavy footsteps behind him and a bellow. Out of his peripheral vision, a Minotaur, definitely Longhorn, came into view. Now a Minotaur he should run from. Although, the Minotaur had an enormous cock. He needed to focus. The Minotaur bellowed and began its charge. He tensed to move. The Scylla flung a thorn the size of a finger at the Minotaur. It moaned and clutched the thorn. It turned a sort of blue and fell to the ground twitching, which was interesting. A complex neurotoxin, with additional chemical derivatives. It wasn't as if his city hadn't fed him drugs every day of his life. He carefully pulled a long thorn. The Scylla continued to explore him. He took a deep breath and carefully, extremely carefully, pricked his genital region. Blessed numbness spread from the spot. He felt himself stabilize somewhat. He exhaled. The Scylla's leaves moved on the breeze of his breath. He took a step. The Scylla followed him. He took another step. The Scylla ambled after. It would seem he had a companion. He fingered a leaf. It trembled beneath his fingers. "I'll call you John, unless you have a problem with that." John moved sensory stalks along his genital area, which, since it was quite numb, was clearly interesting. Apparently, the name John was fine with John. "I'll take that as a yes." Sherlock went down the path. The hedges gave way to smooth gray stone. He kept his eyes open. He avoided the obvious pit, which was obvious, and the less obvious hidden blades. A favorite trick of Moriarty VII. He appropriated a blade, which he wrapped with the sleeves of his skin suit. A few dozen lizards chorused, "Hey, sexy!" He ignored them. He negotiated the patterned tiles, which required the walker step in a certain sequence, or be hit with poisoned gas. John got it wrong. John was a plant, after all. Apparently, Scylla didn't do any better with mustard gas than humans did. He couldn't have said why he went back, and held his breath as he dragged it off the tiles. John shuddered against him, rubbing stalks against his body. The blue flowers were shifting in color to a bright yellow. A much deeper red flower opened on John's central trunk. Its scent was spicy. It smelled delicious. Sherlock swallowed and gave himself another tiny prick, and hoped that he wasn't taking in too much neurotoxin. They passed an alpha cooling inside a pretty young omega. They were missing certain bits, although, as it happened, not the one that had them knotted together. He examined them, brushing off John's stalks. "Stop trying to distract me." There was a solid thunk. One of Moriarty V's lizard descendants fell to the ground with a large thorn between its beady yellow eyes. "Ah," said Sherlock. "That was very good." There was a sweet scent and a faint sound of clicks from John, whose flowers were a mix of deep yellow and rich red. Sherlock did not have time to decipher the message. It was becoming clear that the broadcasts had missed certain elements. The scent and shifting colors were clearly the key. John was trying to talk to him. Scylla were intelligent. There was always something. "Hey, sexy, I'm rooting for you," sang out a dozen tiny lizards. "Also, you're the only one left. Good luck, kiss, kiss. Don't make me have to trigger another batch. Daddy's getting yourself horny for you right now, so hurry up. You've got to be gagging for more than thorns by now." Sherlock gave himself another prick. His heart rate eased. John made more creaking noises, and there was the scent of roses. They kept going. The riddle of the Sphinx hadn't been changed in 30 years. Then again, most people didn't make it this far. He used one of the blades on a few of the descendant lizards. He and John saved each other a few times. He determined certain patterns in John's speech. They came to the wall of fire. John hesitated. Sherlock indicated that he'd be back. Since that didn't appear to be enough, he slid a finger along his dripping ass and brushed it along the stamen of the deep red flower blooming on John's trunk. John swayed and spread out its ambulatory stalks, as if at some sort of parade rest. Sherlock jumped through the fire. On the other side was a bubbling fountain, which was useful under the singed circumstances. Moriarty waited with that ridiculous crown on her head. "Hey, sexy, took you long enough. Now?" She touched a button on her wrist, and a faint mist fell on Sherlock. "Let's see what you're made of." Sherlock's clothes dissolved. His heart rate ratcheted. Adrenaline poured through his system, flushing the toxins, preventing him from feeling and needing. He groaned. Moriarty's skin suit was also gone. The crown was still there, though. She was definitely an alpha. She stepped forward, and Sherlock waited as she pulled him down for a kiss. He needed, he wanted, he ached. He stabbed a handful of thorns into Moriarty's as she pushed him back down into the grass. They both fell. She more than he. Her eyes wide. Oh, sexy, that's so sexy. Her eyes fluttered shut as her breathing slowed and stopped. Sherlock doused himself in the fountain and went back through the fire. John gathered him up, wrapped stalks around him. Sherlock groaned. He wanted to say, fill me. He wanted to say, fuck me. He wanted. John didn't do any of that. John was a plant. A plant whose sensory stalks were now covered in fine hairs that dragged over Sherlock's skin. A thick, oily pollen dragged across him, and he felt good. The skin of a human being is its largest sensory organ. He felt like everything was perfectly, peacefully good. The lizards chirped with Mycroft's voice. Sherlock, stay where you are. I'm sending someone in. I've taken things to hand. They really did need to leave. Mycroft would do the opposite of letting Sherlock live his own life. Sherlock asked John, through a very complicated series of signals, if it would like to see what was outside the labyrinth. He pointed to the north. John replied with lilacs and the creek that meant yes. They had to stop a few times for Sherlock to groan with need, for John to apply more pollen, which was better than a thorn, for Sherlock to steal some supplies from the hidden cabinets kept for the gladiatorial labyrinth runs, for the First Citizen's Ascension Day celebration. Sherlock didn't let John explore the source of Sherlock's dripping need with a sensory stalk until they were outside the labyrinth. As they squeezed through the crack that had been in the north wall since that Ascension Day explosion 3 years ago, Sherlock knelt on the green grass. John took the opportunity to slide that stalk inside the source of his need. Calm and peace spread out from that touch. Sherlock whispered, "Oh, John, first we should..." "Yes, do that." John was very interested in exploring Sherlock, and sliding sensory stalks in and out and over every inch of him. Sherlock brushed the tip of his own phallus against the stamen of that red flower, and cried out as John did something very good everywhere. Sherlock had no idea what the effect of splattering that flower with his ejaculate would be, given Moriarty 3, possibly unicorns. They were still long gone before Mycroft was able to shut down the labyrinth. Moriarty 9 had brought the only controls in with her, and they were keyed to her voice command. They were long gone and exploring, with a few more digressions, the waterfall on the Green Mountain, before anyone made it through the labyrinth. The results of pollinating John's flower in that particular way turned out not to be unicorns. What came of the resulting seed pod wasn't a Scylla either, although to know why it was a Sphinx would require questioning the very dead Moriarty III. For that matter, there was the mystery of why the subsequent pollinations resulted in producing the Nemean lion, with its impenetrable hide, the uncatchable Temusian fox, the sleepless Colchian dragon, the Gorgon sisters with their deadly hair, the fire-breathing Chimera, and the three-headed Cerberus. Some things remain a mystery. The end.